As promised, I am thrilled to announce that our tickets for Australian True Crime Live are now available. Join me in Sydney, Brisbane, and or Melbourne this July. You can come to all three if you want. These tickets are expected to go very quickly, so be sure to secure yours by visiting the link in our podcast bio, or you can head over to the Australian True Crime Facebook page. There'll be a nice link there for you. Update for Brisbane, Australian True Crime fans. Brisbane is almost fully sold out for our live show. If you've been a listener for any length of time, you'll know how passionate I am about true crime stories from Australia. I'm looking very forward to an incredible evening together with you, sharing these captivating tales. We will have great guests as well. So, you know, we love a Q&A. If you've ever come along to an Australian true crime live gig, you'll know we love a Q&A with our guests. Don't miss out. Book your tickets today, and I'll see you in July for a memorable night out.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
If you're going to heal and you're going to get better and you're going to move on and maybe have those healthier relationships and maybe stay away from drinking too much and that, you do need to deal with things that happen in your life and move on, because I can't keep letting it drag me down forever. And that's the mindset of a survivor, not a victim.
In episode 380 of Australian True Crime, we spoke to Anna, one of four women whose evidence convicted former South Australian teacher Trenton John Wickers of indecent assault of children and unlawful sexual intercourse with a child in the 1990s. Here's a reminder of Anna's story.
So this teacher was mid-20s, I think he was about 26 when he came to our school. You know, the cool young teacher, and he'd let you jam in the music room at lunchtime, and he played in bands. And what he did with me was he said, you should join the choir. And I said, oh, well, I don't sing. And so he said, oh, well, that's all right. I'll give you some singing lessons at lunchtime. So it was only one incident with me. It upset me at the time, sort of that afternoon after the bell rang and he unlocked the door and opened the windows and stuff again. I went to my next class.
To let you out.
Mm. You know, I hadn't even realised he'd locked the door until afterwards I saw him unlock it and, like, give me that shushing motion, you know, putting his finger up to his lips, like, don't, you know, I knew what that meant. There had been a 13-year-old girl before me who he had raped. There was another girl at that school, and there was us. And then for whatever reason, whether the education union had recommended it or whatever, he gave them a written statement signed saying, I did this. So then he was counselled and told, right, no more one-on-ones. He had some restrictions on. And then the next school he'd gone to, he'd broken all those rules, offended again, got picked up for it again, admitted to it again, cautioned again, and sent on his way.
In November of 2018, Judge Simon Stritton characterised Wickers as a serious repeat offender and sentenced him to 10 years jail with a non-parole period of 8 years. As the end of that minimum jail period draws near, one of the other three women who helped convict Wickers joins us today on Australian True Crime to talk publicly for the first time. She's passionate about the importance of speaking out about historical sexual assault. As she puts it, many voices can bring about change. And this is her story.
I'm in contact a lot with Anna from the court case. We made contact afterwards. We were shocked and surprised. The similarities in who we are, the similarities in what happened to us and the findings of the court case and the statements in the court case, we were blown away. So that's what drew us together. She made contact with me and asked if she could talk to me, and I said, of course, and she's been updating me throughout the process.
I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, but that you probably hadn't spoken to many people about what had happened. That seems to be par for the course with many victims of sexual assault in childhood. To find yourself hearing someone else's story that sounded so much like yours as an adult, can you tell us about that?
Yes, even when I read or heard the sentencing statements from the judge, I was having trouble determining whether he was talking about me or if he was talking about another of the people involved in the case. It just blew my mind, really. I had kept quiet for a very long time. None of my family knew, none of my peers, none of my friends. The only person I'd sort of quietly mentioned it to was my husband at the time. And this just happened to be at the same time. It was about 2015, 2016. Ads were coming across the television in Victoria for the Royal Commission looking into sexual assault in institutions in Australia. So ads were coming across the television saying, has this happened to you? Do you have information? Do you know of anybody that this has happened to? And I would sit there and quietly look at these ads, and I would get a gentle nudge from my husband at the time, because I hadn't told him the full story. I'd said some things, I'd made some comments. I was in my late 30s at the time, and this information was coming to me, and I thought, I think it's time. I think it's time. If they're asking for this information, surely I'm not the only person. Surely this information might be helpful to other people in the future, but it might help me get some resolution in what's happened to me in the past. So I got the pack from the Royal Commission. It was a paper pack. You could do it online or you could print it out and you put down some information in there. And there really wasn't a lot of information. There was a lot of no's. I was ticking, you know, have you told other people? Do you know of other people that this has happened to? It was all just no, 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 no. But the big question for me was, have you reported this to the police? And would you like us to? So I took a big, deep breath And I ticked the box. Yes, I want it to be reported to the police. And no, I haven't told them about this previously.
And you didn't know at that time that anyone else had or was thinking about it or anything like that?
No, no. And then quite randomly one day I just got a call from the Australian Federal Police and I thought, oh gosh, this is serious. There's something going on here.
Well, that's the other thing. Did you know or suspect that there were other victims of this man?
At high school, his conduct with people is not typically what you would see in a teacher nowadays. We've got to remember back in the day, this was the 90s. I feel the culture of what was accepted for teachers, for coaches, for everything was a little bit different. For example, the school had no record that I had been taken to a different town to do a television interview. There was no sign-out passes. It was just a more relaxed, more trusting place. I know later that there was girlfriends of mine that refused to go on school buses because of some of the conduct of some of the school teachers. It was a place and a time where children were seen as children and teachers were seen as teachers and priests were seen as priests and all kinds of people like that were trusted and they were not to be questioned about their conduct. And I feel that if you'd stood up back then and said, hey, this is happening to me or this happened to me, there was a great fear that you weren't going to be believed, that it might have been pushed under the carpet, that it might have been downplayed.
We heard an incredible term recently from a lady who's written a book about sexual abusers in Newcastle who were in and around the Anglican Church, and she calls it the grey network. She's like, the dark network are the abusers, and then around them there has to be a grey network of people who support it, even if they don't really realise they're supporting it. These are the people who enable it by, they're so reverent and they're so, these are the people who, like, you trust adults, you trust teachers, you trust priests, you won't hear a word against them. You certainly, you create an environment where kids just cannot say, I don't want to go with the priest, I don't want to go with the teacher. Kids would get punished for being rude, disrespectful. Yeah, it's that environment.
Yes. There's such a change now. Even now we ask a child, would you like a hug? Would you like a kiss? Even if we're family, I'm trying to install it with my children. Sometimes my little boy will come up to me and I'm not in a headspace where I will want a hug or a kiss. And I will say to him, not right now, can we do that later? And that might seem harsh, but just trying to create boundaries and even using the right terms and terminology for body parts has changed now. We used to have nicknames for them, and now why not just call a breast? Because you can identify what you're talking about, what part of the body. So I wasn't expecting as an adult to be taken seriously because I had these memories of being a child and the community, the school, it just not being the right environment to report it. So when I ticked on that Royal Commission, yes, I want it to be reported to the police, I was treated with so much respect and belief from the Royal Commission for a start. Then I was treated with belief and respect from the police. And you see all these horrible things in the media, you see on the news, you see made up stories, you see television shows where this is not the case. And I'm not saying it is the case in every court case, but my experience was really positive. It was really supportive from anybody that I wanted to talk to. And that gave me the courage because I was telling the truth, but that my truth was being recorded and it was being believed. And therefore, I felt that I had a very strong case to go forward and write down a statement.
How was your memory of the events? We know that in, I'm going to say, normal circumstances, because the Royal Commission was pretty miraculous in many circumstances. We've spoken to men who were in prison, men who had been in prison for many years and who felt very disconnected from society, who say that they felt for the first time in their lives that they were being treated with respect and being trusted, and they'd never experienced anything like it when they became part of the Royal Commission. So in a lot of ways it sort of doesn't feel like a normal situation. But normally we know that reporting an historical sexual assault is tricky for many, many reasons, not least the aspect of memory, of remembering specific dates and times of assaults and things like that. And so how was your memory?
Firstly, you never forget an event like that.
No.
Unfortunately, there are moments through my life that, you know, that memory is very much crystal clear. Memory does warp a little bit over time, and that's normal. And that's what made the individual people coming forward, that our memories had slightly changed or slight inconsistencies, not huge inconsistencies about who the person was, but that made it all the more believable because studies have shown that memories are not exactly perfect. So it was my interpretation, my memory of what happened to me, and a lot of those memories are internalized. What you're feeling, no one else knows that except for when you verbalize it. What happened to me when I was locked in that classroom, it was quite sudden. I didn't really realize what was happening. And when it started happening, it instantly dawned on me that he was a teacher, I was a child, I didn't want to be there, the door was locked, I could hear all these children playing outside, I could smell the carpet, like these memories flooding back, I can still smell the carpet smelt new, I could still see the blind pulled, I could hear the children playing tennis on the tennis court. And I just started thinking, this is so wrong, like this is hurting me. I don't know how to stop this. I don't think he will stop if I ask him to stop. This is just, I just want this to be over. Like, I don't want this, but I don't know what to do. Once it had finished, I jumped up and I just angrily said to him, I hope that makes you happy. And I lied and I said, and I'm not a virgin anyway. And I remember he grabbed my wrists and he got between the door, the locked door, and myself, and he said, which boy? You tell me what boy. And I just made up a name to get out of there. And I remember running down the hallway just crying. And from that day on, I wanted to wear jeans and I didn't want to go to those lessons. He lived on the same street as the school. And I hid at his house one day. I told my mum I was going to tennis practice or something, and I hid and I said, I don't want this to happen again. I didn't like that. I don't want you to touch me. Like, I was really strong. I've always been quite a strong person.
But that's a little girl. That's amazing, isn't it? When you think about it, it's a 13-year-old girl. Yeah. You've gone to his house and said to him, I don't want you to ever touch me again. That's very powerful.
Yeah, yeah. So I kept my distance. I unfortunately learnt my lesson. I don't overly remember what he said, but I know that I was never touched inappropriately again because I was smart. I made sure that there was people around me. I continued on with the drama and the music, but I always made sure that I wasn't the first person at the dress rehearsal.
Was he fixated on taking your virginity? It sounds like he was.
I think so, yeah.
He was angry that when you told him that he hadn't.
Yeah. There was also a lot of rumours and things going around the school about what I would do or wouldn't do and so forth like that.
Because if you were 13 when this started, did you remain at that school?
Yes.
So there were rumours. That's a long time.
Yes, yes, I remained at that school and I saw it happening to my friends as well. As I said, the culture at the time, there was bus drivers that certain girlfriends wouldn't stay on their bus run. They would start to drive to school, and there was footy boys that worked out that, you know, they could offer you a ride home, and that's not in what they were offering at all.
That's your whole high school career, essentially, overshadowed by this. Your identity in a really important, impactful time in your life.
Yeah, yeah. And then I went to university, and the crowd that I hung out with did not improve. I wasn't necessarily into hard drugs and things myself, but I was certainly hanging out with people that were. I was in rooms of people that were shooting heroin. I was still achieving at uni, but the people that I was associating with and the relationships I was having were very unhealthy. I had two faces to me, this girl that would not go out and would make sure she finished all of her study and made sure that even if it was 2 a.m. that I would type up my assignments and then I would go out clubbing. Actually, it was one night that I was out clubbing that I bumped into that teacher on the dance floor.
Wow.
That was not a good night. I tried to explain to my boyfriend at the time what was going on, but you know what the clubs are like, all this noise. And I was like this deer in this headlights. So I just froze. And I think he tried to talk to me and I ran away. I ran out of the club in tears and I ran and jumped into a taxi. And yeah, I still didn't explain to that boyfriend what had happened and who that person was. I just ran away. And one of the big things that came out of the Royal Commission was that victims of sexual assault don't understand until later in life that they're not to blame for what happened to them. I carried around a huge amount of guilt for a lot of my life that it was my fault. It was my fault that I was an outgoing young teenager. It was my fault that I was good at drama. It was my fault that I accepted private music lessons from this perpetrator. It must have been my fault that I got in a car with a teacher. It must have been my fault that I went to the music lessons at lunchtime. It's not until much later on that you have an adult brain thinking back on these things and think, hang on. He was a teacher. He was an adult teacher. And I was a student and a child. I didn't even understand what the word grooming was.
No, no one did in the 80s and 90s. Absolutely. I don't know that it was a word assigned to childhood sexual assault. And even as you're talking now, I remember very much Anna saying very similar things when we spoke to her about this offender, that she felt responsible because she was an outgoing, artsy kid who really enjoyed his attention and his encouragement of her personality and her nature.
And then it wasn't until late 30s I started thinking, when I had children myself, how naive and how childlike their thought process is and how things have to be explained to a child and talked to a child. And I was like, whoa, wow, this person really did take advantage of who I am as a person and how I wanted to succeed. I got the ducks of every year level. I got the sport awards. I got the poetry awards. In my current career at the moment, I'm an overachiever. That's who I am. So I wanted to do everything that I could to succeed in what I was doing. And that was the lead role in this play at the time. I was always trying to strive to achieve things at an early age. And it was only this morning I was plaiting my daughter's hair. Sorry. And I was thinking about this interview and I was sending my child off to school. And I was thinking how horrible it must have been for my family to find this out years later, that they had packed their kid off in a school uniform, packed their lunchbox, sent them off to school, and something so horrible like that had happened. And she hadn't had the courage to tell anybody until many, many years later. And there were so many changes in my behaviour. I didn't want to wear my school uniform. I wanted to put jeans on at school to cover up my body, and nobody understood what I was doing. I got sent into the principal's office because I wasn't wearing a uniform. I started drinking alcohol at a younger age, and I got taken into the principal's office at a school social because I was drunk and they just thought that there was problems at home. I had the most beautiful childhood. I had a loving mum and dad still together. I had younger brothers. I had horses. I had opportunities. I lived on a beautiful farm. There was absolutely nothing wrong with my home life. It was my school life that was my problem. And then obviously, like many victims, this started a downward spiral in my life that I've only sort of started to realise since reporting the sexual abuse that, hey, the way that pattern happened, the way that, because that happened to me, then I started drinking, then I started getting depressed, then I started feeling suicidal, then I started not having so much care in my life, and starting to date older boys because I didn't understand relationships between men and women or boys and girls at that time, because I had such a warped sense of what was normal and what was right. I became very claustrophobic. I thought that I was going to get pregnant. I thought that I was just tainted, damaged goods, that no one would want me anymore. And it didn't matter how well I excelled at school or jobs or anything, that I was just this person that people could use and abuse. That's how I felt about myself.
How confusing for everyone else in your life that you're such, you're such a successful human being. You always have been so successful, and yet you're so deeply troubled with such low self-esteem. It must have been really hard for people, particularly your family, to understand why this change, why, and to not know how to help, what to say, what to do.
And it was so confronting because the police wanted to interview my mother and my brother to get a context of the time. And
when you reported?
Yes. And I had to make that huge decision. Do I let them do that? And then I had to go and talk to my family and say, hey, when I was 13 in high school, this happened to me. And I didn't tell anybody about it, but I don't want this to happen to other children, and I want the police to know what happened to me. So I'm telling you now that it happened, and do you feel comfortable being interviewed by the police? And they said yes, and they were obviously very shocked and hurt, and I was really worried. Was it going to forever change the relationship between my mother and my brother and my family? But I have the most amazing, supportive family, and I love them to the ends of the earth, and they love me back. So it wasn't a problem, but my mom just felt like she was the worst parent in the world for not knowing. Or, I mean, how could she know? I didn't tell her. My behavior changed, but no one in their right mind would think, hey, my 13-year-old daughter just got locked in a classroom and raped at lunchtime.
This is what they do. This is what these offenders do. They leave so many other people with the feelings of guilt, which is not right. It's not reasonable, but this is what they do.
Yeah. The Royal Commission and going to court and getting that guilty verdict, it just lifted that weight off my shoulders that I'd been carrying around for so many years. That I didn't speak up. When I did speak up, I was telling the truth. The Royal Commission found what I was saying was true. The police found what I was saying was true, and so did the judge. It wasn't until after, because we weren't allowed, it was a closed court, so we couldn't go in and hear the other victims' stories prior to, we had no idea who the other people were, if there was other people, we didn't know. So there was definitely no collusion, and this is what the defense apparently tried to say, that there was collusion between these stories because they were so similar. No, this person had a pattern of behavior that he did to his victims. So he would tell them that they were special. He would tell them that they needed private lessons to improve their singing or their dancing or whatever part they were doing in whatever school or production or anything like that. He would take them for private lessons after hours or lunch times, and he would get very involved in their personal lives, which as a 13-year-old kid, you just think that's normal conversation. Someone asking about your home life, someone asking if you have boyfriends, someone asking if you have pets. That progressing into someone touching you to correct your posture. Which sounds it sounds so silly now thinking about it.
It doesn't. I mean, we're roughly the same age, and I remember that as well. I remember having when you got a teacher who wasn't much older than you two, when you got a young teacher, it was such a novelty, you know, because it felt like teachers were old, they were your parents' age. And so when you got a young teacher, that was always cool. And you sort of felt like they were speaking the same language and it was fun to hang out with them. We had one, a sports teacher who was touching girls to correct their posture in gymnastics, very similar sort of, yes. So that all sort of blew up a few years later, but it didn't at the time. Nobody raised an eyebrow.
You know, it's like, pull your shoulders back. I know that I don't stand correctly. Like, pull your shoulders back, you know, change the shape of your mouth to correct the way you're singing. And so then it progressed to touching my hair and plaiting my hair. And I did think that was a bit strange, but it just seemed like this natural progression to me. And then he would kiss the side of my neck. Now, I just didn't know what to think about this.
They're very much testing boundaries, isn't it? That's that little bit more, you know, baby steps, another step every day.
Yeah. This grooming process really does involve so much of the emotional side of things too. So I think he was about 26 at the time, and he did ask a lot of things that made you feel like you could trust him about your pets, about the sports that you were playing, about your home life and things like that. So he very much approached it on a friend level rather than the teacher level that he was supposed to be. And then the other reason for reporting this was like, gosh, if this happened to me, and I suspect that there was things happening with other girls at the school, there was jokes. We used to make those chatterboxes, you know?
The folded paper things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'd put the numbers on the outside and you'd click the numbers and then you would ask a question, do you like red or blue or green? And I distinctly remember one day opening the thing and it said, had you slept with this teacher?
So some other girl had made that.
Yes.
And she'd written that in there, right?
Yeah. So there was just things like that. There was things where I noticed him paying attention to other girls at school. There was once girl that once she had left school, she moved in with him. There was just all these red flags. But I just started thinking, gosh, what happens if I didn't say anything? And this has happened to other people. And I didn't say anything. Is that my fault too? Is that my guilt? And I carried that guilt for so long. And it was really hard to read the sentencing remarks from the judge, because it had happened to other people. And I have a long time reconciling that why I didn't speak up at the time, but I do strongly feel that it wouldn't have got the headway. And I know the other, with Anna, when she reported it at her school, it wasn't taken that seriously. I think there was some, this teacher's just not allowed to teach by himself unsupervised. So we have to have another teacher or a parent present, you know, so it wasn't taken seriously.
And also, you know, you are a victim. You are not guilty of anything. You know, it's really dangerous for victims of childhood sexual assault to carry any guilt. You can't do that to yourself. You were a baby. You were 13 years old and he victimized you. And for all the reasons, you didn't tell anyone, and that's part of your victimization. You know, it's not, you can't hold any guilt about that. And that's what we were saying before about all the other people who carry the guilt for these perpetrators while they just keep living their lives and keep finding new victims. As you said, he had multiple victims at that time and then kept offending. How many years did he offend for? Did they, well, we'll never know really.
Yeah, he was still a teacher right up until the trial back in 2018, I think it was. So I was horrified at that. I was like, oh no, he's still a teacher. And this was back in 1992 or 93. I haven't mentioned so far how wonderful the rest of the school staff was during my time at school. They were pretty dedicated teachers that did outstanding jobs properly as teachers. They encouraged us, taking us on school camps, encouraging our academic achievements, hard work out of hours, and was always with proper conduct. And I'm sure the news devastated them later, and it would have been very hard for them to find this out years later also. I'm pretty sure they had to send a letter out to current students. And I feel for them because they didn't know. And these things that happened weren't their fault.
If you'd like to talk to someone about abuse that's taken place in your life, no matter how long ago it happened, your GP is always a good place to start. If that's not going to work for you, you can contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or via their website 1800respect.org.au. Or you can call Lifeline's 24-hour phone counselling service on 13 11 14.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I was never going to let what happened to me define who I was. I was never going to get the better of me. I'd like to think I'm not a victim, I'm a survivor. I'm a very strong personality. I like achieving well. And it's not to get the pat on the shoulder, it's to provide for those people that are around me. So I'm a single mum. I run my own business. And I solely provide pretty well for my two children. So, and that's another reason that I've just always wanted to speak out, because I just want to look after other people. But it hasn't been without a struggle. I don't think I have a firm handle on healthy relationships, the romantic relationships. I think I'm a great mum. I think I'm a great work colleague. But when it comes to a healthy relationship, I do think I have struggled. As I said before, it was a bit of a downward spiral. This grooming, this process took me through that I was only important or only special to people sexually, that I had no other great qualities to bring to a relationship, that it didn't matter what you did outside of that. It came down to what you were worth to someone without your clothes on. That's a really horrible thing. And just that feeling of being locked in a room and that man between the door and myself. That's the other thing. I'm so claustrophobic now. If you put me in a small space, I really, really struggle. There was one incident. I used to clean houses, and there was this strange house that I cleaned, and I left my phone out on the table. People weren't home, and I was in this little boy's room, and I was cleaning the room. And I pushed the door shut because there was all these sticky marks on the back of the door, and I was wiping the sticky marks off the door. It wasn't until then that I realized there was no door handle on the inside, and I was locked in this room. And there was a lot of strange things in this house. There was a chain around the TV. There was no personal items in the house. It just had this really strange feel. There was no toys in this boy's bedroom. There was just two musical instruments. And I'm in this small room thinking, this is not good. This is not good. What's going to happen to me when they come home? Was this planned?
Mm.
All these strange things going through my mind. And I ransacked the room. I couldn't find anything, but I went into a backpack and I found a multi-tool. And there was these stays on the window. And I unscrewed the stays and I jumped out of a two-story building to get out of there. Went back in the house, got my mobile phone, put all the window stays back. But I never went back to cleaning that house again. And it just really dawned on me how much I hate being in small spaces and the musical instruments in there, and just all those memories came flooding back. I, at university, you know, I was hanging around with all these bad people, and I had that incident happen on the dance floor. And I was also made to study, I was studying drama. I studied Bachelor of Arts in English and Drama. And I was studying film, and a lot of the film content was just all the sexual violence towards kids in India, like forced marriages in India. And I just had the most horrid time. Everybody else was processing this and understanding that it was horrid, but no one else was losing sleep and shaking when they were trying to write about what they were watching. And I just had such a hard time. And, you know, I did drink a little bit too much at times. I did try drugs, and I definitely got into very unhealthy relationships. I've had depression. I've been suicidal, but I've never let things beat me. I've always worked through it. And this was something that I needed to work through. And I finally felt that I was ready to work through it. And counselors are wonderful. They can help you and talk you through situations and scenarios and things to look forward to and things to be grateful for. Because no matter how dire your situation is, you can always look at things that there are so many things in my life that I am grateful for. There is so much love in my life from various things, and my life could be so much worse. It could be. When you look at some other people's situations and you go, gosh, I'm grateful for many of the things in my life, but I'm certainly not shy of saying what happened to me and saying this man should have never been trusted to be a teacher of children.
No, and trusted again and again, as, you know, was the case until recently.
I think the teacher really picked on the wrong girls.
Yeah.
He forgot that they were going to grow up to be strong, ballsy women. Anna is one of the strongest, ballsiest ladies that I know. She stood up. She got his name suppression lifted. She's lifted her name suppression. She's called for other people to say, hey, many voices make one strong story. It's part of the reason that I'm here talking to you. She's strong. She's articulate. She's beautiful.
So many child predators do pick on children who are really quiet, unsure of themselves, who've already been victimized in various ways, who come from families where they're sort of, this is a massive generalization, but a lot of times they come from huge families where they're a bit kind of overlooked, or families that are in crisis where their parents are a bit distracted, or, you know, all of those things. Whereas this guy really did have a different victimology. He's chosen girls who are very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a strange choice he's made, I have to say.
Because I did not let it, it's definitely impacted me, but I didn't let it stop me living my life and being who I am, and it won't either. So definitely he picked on the wrong people. We are strong people, but I did make a very good witness. They definitely couldn't discredit me on the stand, because I could stand up and say, I run my own business. I'm a mother of two. I mean, gosh, if you even look at the job that I'm in now, you have to have a clean police record. I have no speeding tickets. I have nothing.
The bravery that it took to tick that box and to not know where it was going to lead you, and then have them say, oh, well, I'll tell you where it's going to lead you, back to Adelaide to court, and not know what that means. So I'm assuming you'd never been to court before.
Oh, my gosh, no.
Yeah, you know, who's going to be there? Is he going to be there? I mean, all of that.
Oh, yes, he was there. Yeah. And there was no, we were just sitting around outside the court, and there was no separation between anybody outside. And I went to the unisex toilet that was in the foyer and came out and bumped into him.
No.
No. we both looked at each other and just the sudden realization of who each other's, because I hadn't seen him for I don't know how many years since that time on that dance floor when I was at university. So that was just a shock. And that really threw me. But then what else threw me was it was a closed court, but he was able to listen to my what I was being asked and my answers. And he was allowed to have one support person in the courtroom, and it was his wife. So I was trying to not look at them when I was giving my evidence, and I was trying to talk to the people that were asking me the questions, mostly the judge and the lawyers. But I couldn't help but look at him and her sometimes, because a lot of the time they were laughing at my responses. So that was just crushing, because it had taken so much bravery to get to that point. These things take years to put together. It's not just one day you fill in, one day you see the ad, next day you're filling in the information to the Royal Commission, the next day you get a police call. No, that's years. It's been years to get from filling in the paperwork to where I was that day. And so much, as I said, just holding that guilt, that pressure, that the thought process of what's going to happen to me, what's the worst that could happen to me? Well, the worst that could happen to me was me being brave to stand up there and say what, in my experience, that had happened to me, to have those two people laughing at me. I don't think it was a loud laugh, but it was an eye contact, smirk, grin, smile, you know, nudge the ribs, a subtle thing. I'm not sure if the judge saw it. The judge's comments were pretty fair and pretty harsh, you know, using words like just abuse of his position as a teacher. And one thing that the judge said, your offending has had a serious impact on your victims in different ways and to different degrees as described in evidence and in victims' impact statements. They have been seriously impacted, some for the rest of their lives. At a very formative and vulnerable stage of their young lives, you took advantage of each of them for your selfish, prudent purposes. Your actions in having unlawful vaginal intercourse with AA were particularly reprehensible and have, as she describes so movingly in her victim impact statement, a huge effect on her throughout her life. My victim impact statement, parts of that were read across the national news, so that was another moment for me of, it was surreal to be in that courtroom. It was surreal, the outcome, it was surreal, everything that had happened. And it did take me a long time to sort of process afterwards, wow, I just helped put that person in jail for that amount of time. And then it was quite interesting to hear from the other victims, and Anna reached out and I said to her, I was struggling to work out, you know, were you AA or BB or CC in this, because the stories were all the same.
Mm.
So if our stories are quite the same and we think we're the tip of the iceberg, there must be other stories out there that are the same, if people wanted to reach out to anyone that they felt that they could trust to tell the story. And I'm not saying people need to, but in my experience, it has helped me deal with what happened to me, and it has helped me move on with what happened to me, and I've never let it define who I am. All the people that came forward with the Royal Commission have already made positive changes in schools, in churches, in community organisations. Now historical sexual assault cases can be brought to courts. There's better ears listening out there. The police are more aware of things happening and able to deal with victims in such a positive light. It doesn't always end up in a conviction, but there's more chance that it will now if the person's telling the truth. In most cases, they are. One of the biggest things that I took away from this whole process was how many voices coming together have made change. And that was very important for me, because in the past, before the Royal Commission, you couldn't bring historical cases, sexual assault cases, to the South Australian courts. That's my understanding of it. And now you can. All these little pieces do add up. They are making change in Australian laws. They are making changes for victims. They are making changes for survivors. And I'm so very glad that I spoke up now, because it has changed things for myself and other people, and it's lifted that weight. I can feel that I can hold my head proud now and say, I didn't do anything wrong when I was a child. And even though I didn't do anything wrong, something horrible happened to me. But by telling the truth and by standing up and saying what happened to me, I've made my life better, and hopefully I've made other people's lives better as well. And we got this little card from the Royal Commission saying, thank you for speaking up. And that sounds like such a small little thing to get, but it's just a recognition that I was brave enough to make those steps. I was brave enough to tick that box. And when they said, do you want to speak to the police? I said, yes. Do you want to make that statement? Yes. Do you want to tell your family? Yes. And then bang, all of a sudden I was extradited into the criminal court in Adelaide. I had, I don't know, I think it was 38 hours notice to get my passports ready. And then when I was on the stand, I think I'd had 3 hours sleep. Don't get me wrong, it was a lot of pressure and a lot of fear that you might say something wrong or not remember something correctly, and the whole thing's just suddenly thrown out of court. But that was not the case.
In those years in between ticking the box in the paperwork and it getting to court, you've told your family, you know, the stress of that, the emotional work that you were putting in during that time while waiting to go to court, waiting to see what happened, waiting for resolution, just in the court process, had to have been profound. Dealing with your kids.
Yes.
You've got kids as well.
I've got little kids.
Trying to stay cool when you're under so much pressure and a kid knocks over another drink.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
yeah,
it's full on. Yeah.
Yeah. Just trying to be the best mum that I could, and trying to run my business and run my study. And yeah, it was, I've got lots of animals, so like looking after those.
Did you fall in a heap when it all finished? You know, what happens then when it's done? Like, you know, he got 10 years minimum 8. Other people reach out to you. I know it's a relief, but is there a sense of sort of what now? What next?
Well, it all went pretty quiet for a little while. It was like, phew, that's done. I don't have to deal with this again. He's in jail. This is such a relief. Like, I live in a different country. I can move on with my life. No one knows who I am. So, you know, I'm not getting hounded by the press. Everything's okay. And then I started thinking, he's going to get out of jail. We were asked if we wanted a restraining order, and I said yes. So he's not allowed to contact me by phone, by email, any which way, and he's not allowed to approach me in the street or anything like that. So that was great. But I thought, gosh, he's going to get out of jail one time soon. So what do we do there? What happens if he's walking down the street and my family's walking the other way? Or, you know, those things happen, and South Australia's a small place. These things can occur. And I was suddenly thinking about it. And Anna had contacted me because she had recorded the podcast with you. And it did take me a few days to sit down and think, do I want to listen to that, or don't I want to reopen those wounds? Because I thought, oh, I've done that part. I thought, no, I'm going to listen to it. So I sat down and got prepared and listened to it. And you're not quite the same after you listen to things like that. It does take you... You might have to ask someone else to have your children for the night, or, you know, you might need to just go off and do something quietly by yourself and just process things. She'd been in contact a little bit more, and I suddenly started thinking, gosh, I think he's due to get out. What's going to happen now? And I got this amazing message from her. He's up on new charges. We don't know who from. We don't know what they are. She sent me a screenshot that he was heading into the court, and I believe a new date has been set for September next year, and that he is held behind bars until that court case is heard. So that's my understanding of it at the moment, is that he's not out, he's up on new charges. So if there are other people out there that have been sitting on the fence and thinking, I wonder if I should say something, now is the time that you could add weight to that new court case if that's something that you felt that you wanted to do. It was a shit situation. It was a shit sandwich that I was given. But what can I take out of this? And I can take out of this that I haven't ended up a drug addict. I haven't ended up in jail. I haven't hurt other people. And that's something's horribly what sexual assault victims end up doing is hurting other people in the same way that, you know, bad behaviors and treatment was done to them. So then they are taught that that's normal. So they continue that on. I haven't fallen into a drinking problem. I haven't got a drug problem. I'm not in jail. I've got two beautiful, healthy children. I've got a successful business. I have done the best with what I have got at my fingertips. Like, I've always tried to exceed. So I do think you're right that he did pick on the wrong people. He picked on people that always had a little bit of spark for life, zest for life, and, you know, were fun characters. And unfortunately, he's taken a little bit away from who we are and what we are, but he's not going to beat me or change me from that experience. It certainly wasn't a great experience, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. But I'm here today, and I'm going to try and protect future children if I can, because I've now got an 11-year-old daughter, and as I was saying, I was plaiting her hair and sending her off to school, and she's a smart girl. But if someone preys on you like that teacher preyed on me, you can't protect children in every situation at every point in their life, but you can improve the situations and the environments they're in by people like myself and Anna standing up and saying what happens so that more people are aware and things can change for the better for the future. If you're going to heal and you're going to get better and you're going to move on and maybe have those healthy relationships and maybe stay away from drinking too much and that, you do need to deal with things that happen in your life and move on, because I can't keep letting it drag me down forever. And that's the mindset of a survivor, not a victim.
Thank you to our guest today, Jane. And as she said, the man who raped her in a classroom when she was 13 years old and he was her teacher, Trenton John Wickers, was listed among those appearing in the Adelaide District Court on April 12 this year. We don't know what that matter was concerning. If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 YARN on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As promised, I am thrilled to announce that our tickets for Australian True Crime Live are now available. Join me in Sydney, Brisbane, and or Melbourne this July. You can come to all three if you want. These tickets are expected to go very quickly, so be sure to secure yours by visiting the link in our podcast bio, or you can head over to the Australian True Crime Facebook page. There'll be a nice link there for you. Update for Brisbane, Australian true crime fans. Brisbane is almost fully sold out for our live show. If you've been a listener for any length of time, you'll know how passionate I am about true crime stories from Australia. I'm looking very forward to an incredible evening together with you, sharing these captivating tales. We will have great guests as well, so, you know, we love a Q&A. If you've ever come along to an Australian true crime live gig, you'll know we love a Q&A with our guests. Don't miss out. Book your tickets today, and I'll see you in July for a memorable night out.